Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Health and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. We are live on Sedona Talk Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and we are also archived on iTunes. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a little bit cool here in the South. We're in just the beginning of October, but don't you know, we only had 24 hours of something below 80. Oh, darn, I just wish it will last so much longer. But I know there's so many listeners that are saying, my goodness, just to hold on to that warmth for another day because it'll be pretty cold coming up this winter. You know, and I love to see the fall and I love to see the changes. But, you know, there's a lot of people that are having kids and they're saying, I'm fine one day, and then all of a sudden they feel like it's the fall or the winter of their children's lives. There's been changes in their lives. Something all of a sudden changed. Today we're going to be talking about autism and the autism spectrum disorders. And, you know, I had worked so many years with children on this spectrum, and I think it was in the late 90s, early 2000s in Arizona. And what we would always find was that there was so much confusion on information, what was occurring, why were these children having sudden symptoms, and all of a sudden, you're good one day, you're not good the next day, and the next day is just a shadow of all those other days. So really, we're going to be talking about what is it? What is autism? How does it affect the family? How does it affect everyone in the family? How do you be able to find services? And also, you know, is this really... So many people say it's so one person's fault, it's this person's fault, it's that medication, it's this medication. And I'm not really sure that we can really blame it on one specific thing. I think it's really, just as it's a spectrum disorder, I think it's also a range of different things coming together and showing up and saying, my goodness, you know, in the children's bodies, we can't do it anymore. What we've done to the world or to people or to the bodies or to the health, we just can't take it anymore. We need to really start looking at how we're treating ourselves and how things, what we're putting in and how we're taking care of ourselves and our earth is so vitally important. So today my guest is Pamela Bryson Weaver. She is the author of Living Autism Day by Day. It's a daily reflections and strategies to give you hope and courage. There were so many women and fathers that I would work with, and they would say, you know, I just don't know how I'm going to make it to the next day. My world has totally crashed. I don't even recognize myself anymore. Some days I can't even pick up my head and be able to say it's time to get up again in the morning, but I know I'm so vitally needed, and I just don't know where my place is and how I can really help. So today Pamela is going to be sharing her personal stories as she does have children with special needs, and that's really good to hear from someone else that does have these issues in their home and how it has affected their homes. Because not everybody has this really lively life and everything is great. People have challenges, and sometimes when they have those challenges, they're not able to bring them forth because other people just simply can't understand, and we do understand that because when it's hard for others to understand, it's much easier to be able to suffer in silence. So today, Pamela's going to be sharing her entire story. Pamela, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette. It's great to be with you.
And doesn't it, don't you believe it is so different? You know, we find so many things in these decades has changed. You know, children's health, the health of the world, the environment. My goodness, you know, where are we going?
Yeah, I really agree. When my son was diagnosed 14 years ago, autism was 1 in 10,000 children. And today, right. CDC says it's 1 in 68. And it's just... Mm-hmm. Incredible, you know, how much it has increased throughout the world.
And still it's something with no answers, you know, and everybody likes to take pot shots at it, which is sometimes worse because you seem to say, okay, I understand that I'll ride on that train for a while and see what I can do. But then it really leads to a lot of disappointment and despair in the families, don't you think?
I absolutely agree. It's a difficult disorder to get your head wrapped around it. And I mean, there are so many theories out there of the causes of autism, and there's so many changes in our environment as well, and it's hard to pull the two of them together. And we do all have personal opinions. I have a personal opinion. You have a personal opinion. Will we ever know for sure? I don't know.
You know, and I'm wondering if it really even matters what that ultimate thing is, because you really still have to learn to work with it, correct? It's not like
exactly.
You're going to find this miracle drug and all of a sudden all the children are going to totally revert to being whatever we believe that they should be. Same thing as cancer. Can we turn around and say that there's going to be this miracle drink and everybody needs to get their hands on it and, you know, no one will ever suffer with cancer again? So I'm not really sure that really that might be the answer. I think is learning how to live your life is more the answer.
Yes, and cope with the disabilities, because you don't know how or when whatever treatment comes up. As time goes on, better treatments come up. It doesn't really matter, does it, how it started or where it started, as far as taking care of our loved ones is concerned.
Right. I mean, we all still have to get up. We all still have to eat, drink, you know, sleep, take care of our day, and we all are going to grow. We're all going to learn. And it really, when you have these other things around, it's like, you know, there's been so many shows, there's been so many events and so many conferences and things that I would go to, and there, you know, people would be up there wagging their fingers and yelling and screaming. You almost feel like you're at one of these you know, these religious revivals or whatever. But, you know, really does it, they're just so passionate about it and they feel so strongly. But, you know, when it comes down to it, they still have to return home in the same event that they came in. So
yeah,
I know that it's hard. Yeah, and it's hard to feel that, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. And I got to be honest with you, I was one of those parents. When I was president of Autism Society New Brunswick, I met with every single minister. I was out there with my posters fighting for therapy for my child. There was not a single therapist in my province. I had to leave my practice, my dental practice my husband and I had, to learn ABA so that I could work with my child when he was diagnosed. I then had to train university students and create a team to help my son. So I know full well the challenges, you know, that it takes to raise a child on the spectrum of autism. And, you know, I'm not the only one. Parents are going through this all over the place. And to navigate the waters of autism, you know, and work with your community and find, you know, the little known resources and try and communicate with other parents. And, you know, there's so much. It's overwhelming, which was why I had written my book after, you know, journaling for 14 years.
And, you know, it's so vitally hard to feel that you're in this. I mean, many parents have said to me that they feel like they're in their own prison and, you know, they'll never get out. They have a life sentence. This is just what it is. And I know a lot of people feel like that in the beginning, or they feel like that in the middle, and some people are still feeling that. So we really, you know, want to emphasize, no matter where you are and how you feel about this, everybody can understand, because most people have been there, they're going to be there, or they will never get out of that space. So we all, everybody does understand.
Yeah, exactly. I know my experience as a mother, you know, and a wife and a professional in the autism field, you know, living this world helped me gain really valuable insights about this mysterious disorder. It's not all, you know, doom and gloom. There were a lot of blessings that came about, and I grew as a person, and I became very aware of autism awareness. And you know what? That was self-awareness, too, while I was on this journey.
Right.
And when my son was first diagnosed, I went in complete denial. When the doctor told me, the specialist, that my son had autism, I kind of told him he was full of it. And he was just like his dad. His dad's really shy and quiet. So there's so much that, you know, you adjust to. And that's the important thing, is learning to adjust and accept and move on.
Yeah, and to be able to just hear that, I think. Can you share a little bit about what you saw first as symptoms, or what you felt brought you to that point?
Absolutely. When my son was born, he met every milestone. We had a healthy pregnancy, a long, long labor, like 40 hours or whatever. They had to induce it. But other than that, he met every single milestone. And this is what's hard for me, is that he walked, he talked, he, you know, asked for a cookie, he, mama, dada, all these things. And at 24 months, I took him for his measles, mumps, and rubella, and within a week, he was in complete vegetarian state, banging his head on the floor and flapping his hands. Now, I did not know what autism was at the time, nor am I saying, by the way, that that is the, you know, the cause. This is my experience, and I feel that that was a catalyst, and maybe my son's immune system was low, and this, you know, triggered it. I don't know. So what happened is he began to rock, bang his head. He lost all his speech. He began wetting himself, everything. And we had to basically start over, completely over, like he was an infant.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very difficult. And the other thing is, for me, I have three children, two with special needs. So I was very accustomed to having a child with special needs. My sister had Down syndrome, so I really felt God blessed me with, you know, a couple of beautiful children, and knew I would be a mother that would happily handle this. But the hardest part of this whole journey for me in the beginning was when this happened. We all have high hopes for our child, and ours was, you know, maybe Johnny would be a dentist one day. I went to my first healing mass. When I finally accepted the diagnosis. And when I was at that mass, I asked, you know, okay, God, you know I can handle this. This isn't a big deal. I said, but what I need to know is you're with me, that it's your will. So I kind of silently to myself, while I was at that mass, I asked God to show me a sign. I said, you know, give me tongue, throw me on the floor, have someone come up to me and say the word autism. I just need to know you're with me.
Right.
And nothing happened in that mass.
Oh.
And I fell apart. I went home, you know, literally I screamed all the way home. I was by myself in the car, and I stopped praying. I was angry. I did the whole, you know, Kubler-Ross syndrome, denial, bargaining, you name it. And then it took about 6 weeks. I come out of that, and I said, all right, we're going to find out, you know, what's going on. And I watched a video. I don't know if you've ever seen this video, Dr. Jeanette. David Suzuki on autism.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful. And that child on that video rocked and banged his head like my son was. And I said, I'm just never going to let that happen for the rest of his life. So that's kind of how it all began for me in the beginning.
And so many people have that very similar, almost identical to some people, pattern happen. And just like you said, you know, with the vaccinations and everything, we can't always blame it on that right now. And maybe, you know, decades later we might, or we might not. But we do have to realize that we are living in a toxic world, and that our bodies are not the same as they always used to be. You know, I watched a show the other day, and they were saying they were interviewing people in their 90s and over to find out how to have a good life. And the people are saying all these different things. But if you look at it, those people in those 90s and overs were not exposed to all these things that you and I were when we grew up, and then we had children. So we had, it was the beginning of the vaccinations, if you look back in history, in the 50s and 60s. It was the beginning of antibiotics in the 70s and the 80s. It was the beginning of antivirals. It was the beginning of ibuprofen. It was the beginning of all of these other over-the-counter medications. You know, things just weren't out there. It was just, you know, you kind of, if you got sick, you got one shot of penicillin and you were good to go. Or if you had a headache or something, it was like, oh, well, go in and lay down or go outside and play. Oh, well, you know. But now, I think in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, we truly have become, you know, every time your body isn't in a perfect you know, status, we are looking for something to alter ourselves back. We always have to alter ourselves back. And then we want to be altered because we want to enjoy something, or we have to be altered because we don't want to be in pain. Or we have to be altered because something, it doesn't feel right. you know. So we're really kind of in a really horrible soup now. And if you look at that, also the numbers correlate, as you've said, you know, it was 1 in 10,000 decades ago, and now it's 1 in 68. So are we really going to continue this pattern of continually, you know, souping up our bodies? Because what it really does, it's not always about the current status, but it really is. But it's also about our genome and about going forward. In other words, their ancestors. What's the world going to look like in two decades? That will be something that's so profound. I'm not even sure we could ever picture that.
I don't know, but, you know, I read a book once, Dr. Jeanette, and it was called, I don't know if you've heard of this, it's called The Pottinger Experiment. It was actually written by a dentist, and he was also a scientist, and it was in the 1956, and this is what really seals what I think, you know, is going on sort of with all of this, cancer, autism, whatever, is during those times in the States, they came out with the frozen dinners, you know, those hungry man dinners?
Yep.
And he instinctively knew that there was something wrong with that. And so he did an experiment, and that you can actually buy the book. It's called The Pottinger Experiment. It's a small book, but it's a journal study. It's not personal. And he took cats because they replicate themselves very quickly. And he had three groups of cats. And one he fed raw food, like from the farm, you know, mice, raw milk, healthy raw food. And the second group, he fed the cats canned cat food. And the third group, he fed them these hungry man dinner, frozen dinners. Within